Svetlana Hoth stared into space. I said, "And at worst, you'll just disappear. Right here. One minute you'll be on the street and then you won't be. You'll be rotting in Guantanamo. Or you'll be on your way to Syria or Egypt so they can kill you there." Lila Hoth didn't speak. "My advice? Forget all about it. Your father and your uncle were killed in a war. They weren't the first, and they won't be the last. Shit happens."
"We just want to ask him why."
"You already know why. There had been no declaration of hostilities, therefore he couldn't kill your guys. It's about the rules of engagement. There's a heavy-duty briefing before every mission."
"So he let someone else do it for him?"
"It was the times. Like you said, it might have started World War III. It was in everyone's interest to avoid that."
"Have you looked at the file? Did Susan really have the confirmation? Just tell me, yes or no. I won't do anything without actually seeing it. I can't."
"You won't do anything, period."
"It wasn't right."
"Invading Afghanistan in the first place wasn't right. You should have stayed home."
"Then so should you. From all the places you went."
"No argument from me."
"What about freedom of information?"
"What about it?"
"America is a country of laws."
"True. But do you know what the laws actually say now? You should read the Herald Tribune more carefully."
"Are you going to help us?"
"I'll ask the concierge to call you a cab to the airport."
"Is that all?"
"That's the best help anyone could give you."
"Is there anything I can do to change your mind?"
I didn't answer.
"Anything at all?"
"No." We all went quiet after that. The tea expert brought the check. It was in a padded leather wallet. Lila Hoth signed it. She said,
"Sansom should be called to account."
"If it was him. If it was anybody." I took Leonid's phone out of my pocket and dumped it on the table. I pushed my chair back and got ready to leave. Lila said,
"Please keep the phone."
"Why?"
"Because my mother and I are staying. Just a few more days, and I would really like to be able to call you if I wanted to."
She wasn't coy in the way she said it. Not coquettish, no lowered eyelids, no batted lashes, no hand on my arm. No attempt to seduce, no attempt to change my mind. It was just a plain statement, neutrally delivered. Then she said,
"Even if you're not a friend."
And I heard the tiniest bat squeak of a threat in her voice. Just a faint, far-off chime of menace. A hint of danger, barely audible behind the words, accompanied by an imperceptible chill in her amazing blue eyes, like a warm summer sea changing to sunlit winter ice. Same color, different temperature. Or maybe she was just sad, or anxious, or determined. I looked at her with a level gaze and put the phone back in my pocket, and stood up and walked away. There were plenty of cabs on 57th Street, but none of them was empty. So I walked. The Sheraton was 3 blocks west and 5 blocks south, 20 minutes max. I figured I could get there before Sansom finished his lunch. Chapter 39. I didn't get to the Sheraton before Sansom finished his lunch, partly because the sidewalks were clogged with people moving slow in the heat, and partly because it had been a short lunch, which I guessed made sense. Sansom's Wall Street audience wanted to spend maximum time making money and minimum time giving it away. I didn't make it onto the same Amtrak as him either. I missed a DC train by 5 minutes, which meant I trailed him back to the Capitol a whole hour and a half in arrears. The same guard was on duty at the Cannon Building's door. He didn't recognize me, but he let me in anyway, mainly because of the Constitution, because of the First Amendment in the Bill of Rights. Congress shall make no law abridging the right of the people to petition the government. My pocket junk inched through an X-ray machine, and I stepped through a metal detector and was patted down, even though I knew the light had flashed green. There was a gaggle of house pages inside the lobby, and one of them called ahead and then walked me to Sansom's quarters. The corridors were wide and generous and confusing. The individual offices seemed small, but handsome. Maybe they had once been large and handsome, but now they were broken up into reception anterooms and multiple inner spaces, partly for senior staff to use, I guessed, and partly to make eventual labyrinthine access to the big guy seem more of a gift than it really was. Sansom's place looked the same as all the others. A door off the corridor, lots of flags, lots of eagles, some oil paintings of old guys and wigs, a reception desk with a young woman behind it. Maybe a staffer, maybe an intern. Springfield was leaning on the corner of her desk. He saw me, and nodded without a smile, and pushed off the desk and came to the door to meet me and jerked his thumb farther along the corridor. "Cafeteria," he said. We got there down a flight of stairs. It was a wide, low room full of tables and chairs. Sansom was nowhere in it. Springfield grunted like he wasn't surprised, and concluded that Sansom had returned to his office while we were out looking for him, by an alternate route, possibly via a colleague's billet. He said the place was a warren, and that there were always conversations to be had, and favors to be sought, and deals to be struck, and votes to be traded. We walked back the same way we had come, and Springfield stuck his head around an inner door, and then backed away and motioned me inside. Sansom's inner office was a rectangular space larger than a closet and smaller than a $30 motel room. It had a window and paneled walls covered with framed photographs and framed newspaper headlines and souvenirs on shelves. Sansom himself was in a red leather chair behind a desk, with a fountain pen in his hand and a whole lot of papers spread out in front of him. He had his jacket off. He had the weary, airless look of a man who had been sitting still for a long time. He hadn't been out. The cafeteria detour had been a charade, presumably designed to allow someone to make an exit without me seeing him. Who? I didn't know. Why, I didn't know. But I sat down in the visitor chair and found it still warm from someone else's body. Behind Sansom's head was a large, framed print of the same picture I had seen in his book, Donald Rumsfeld and Saddam Hussein, in Baghdad.